You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
This gardening feature is brought to you by Harry Khumans Garden Center.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Khumans Garden Center, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden center, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Khumans Garden Center.
It's 10:30 and time for the Garden Zone with David Parker from Budding Inspirations and our sponsor, Jeremy Fenn from Harry Khumans Garden Center. Good morning, and welcome on this Monday morning.
It is cold, it is cold.
Thank you.
Thanks, you. Yeah, very fresh. How are you otherwise?
As well, thank you.
Yeah, it's good, good. Yes, you, Mr. Fenn, didn't see you too. How was your holiday?
Yeah, good to get away.
Nice to get away. Nice to have a break.
But yeah, back to the grindstone.
Back to the grindstone, as always. But yeah, got to keep it going. Dams are nearly full, though. That was a good rain we had for 2 weeks.
That's what I was hoping for, that we wouldn't have a repeat of the water restrictions.
Yeah, 2018 stuff. It's tougher than
that. It's amazing how long ago it was, but you still think about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, we all just noticing the weather phenomenon around the world. It's just changing. You know, I mean, I don't know if you remember, I've got pictures, but we had that hail.
Mm-hmm.
It was literally half the size of a golf ball. I've never seen that in Cape Town.
I think I was away when the hail came, but yeah. I had someone come in yesterday, and he was bringing in his plant, and he's like, what do I do with this? Because, you know, he thought it was an insect or just a fungus. And I said, no, well, that's hail damage.
Amazing hail. Yeah. I lost my LMB. It cost me like $1,500 to get somebody in to fix my DSTV so I could watch a rugby Saturday.
Oh, wow.
Just a hail, you know. And yeah, also at my back outside roofing, it was a bit, I bought it secondhand already so I could just build a little lapa. But the hail went straight through the roof sheeting, hey, on some of the.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was pretty intense, not going to lie. Anyway, I believe today, Jeremy, we're going to change up the topics a bit and we're going to talk about hard landscaping.
Yes.
Which is obviously paving, retaining walls. I see you mentioned drainage as well, one of the things I love to do, and obviously very important with the weather we've had.
I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah.
Because I've got, you know, I'm doing a bit of a renovation here in Sunnydale. I think I've mentioned it before. And there's like standing water at this property.
It's very important.
And it's just crazy that you think this is a sandy area, but it's not.
It's actually, I think it's the two extremes. I think it's sand and clay.
And
we don't have anything in between. You know, like the one area I know in the country, Newlands, when I used to work in Newlands quite a bit, like Newlands just has, because it's at the base of that beautiful big mountain, it just has this lush organic soil naturally,
beautiful.
But everywhere else in this country. But okay, cool, man. So, yeah, I mean, drainage is a very important thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to start off on that topic by saying that I think the most important thing for drainage is I've done a lot of natural soakaways.
Mm-hmm.
So where we've obviously taken water using drainage pipes, using your sand and your stone aggregate so that the water does get to the pipes, take it away. And then we used to dig like a 1 by 1 meter pit, sometimes a 2 meter deep by 1 meter pit. And obviously you've got to layer your pit and make sure that you have your sand underneath, a bitum layer, your stone. But even that, Jeremy, with the type of weather we've now starting to experience, I don't think a pit is the way to go anymore.
Okay.
I think it's important nowadays to maybe put in a little submersible, it's like a little JoJo tank basically that has a submersible pump in it with a float, and obviously you angle all your water there, and then when that fills up, it naturally kicks on when it's full, and then you obviously run your pipe out into the road or something. And I think that's the way to go in the future, because we're now seeing what might change. You never know. Next year, we might have a tsunami come through the valley. That's how weather's changing.
Well, Andrew had that
tornado.
Tornado, hurricane.
Insane. What are your thoughts on that, Jeremy?
Yeah, well, at the nursery, or at the garden center, we've actually got about, I think it's 3 or 4 concrete sumps that we've built. With
I was there the other day and I saw the one was a bit overflowing.
This is the thing. They're not blocked. They're actually, just because there was so much water coming down,
amazing,
that the pumps weren't actually strong enough to pull all that water out. So I think a combo, you could definitely have like your, because you do want that when we do get rain, maybe like in a summer rain, and you have everything going into like a sump that has the opportunity for the water to get back into the soil nearby.
Yeah.
Rather than going straight into the stormwater. because then, you know, you do want some water to stay.
Yeah.
Because if it's going into a sump and it's being pumped out, it's usually going into the gutter.
100%.
And then that goes to stormwater, and then stormwater is obviously going out 100%. To the sea. So you're not actually doing your garden any good if it.
Yeah.
But the like I mentioned, our sump pumps weren't handling that
100%.
That amount of water that was coming down. So yeah, I think it's a combo of those sort of things. But to get the water from the problem areas to the sump, what are the options in those? You mentioned it briefly, but what are the differences?
You're going to be using a. I just want to go back one step quickly before I forget it, because that happens nowadays in my old age. But remember, if you got somebody who knows what they're doing, and I hope that's me to a degree as well, you can also manipulate that situation, Jeremy. So if you have a sump that's pumping water away, you know, in winter when there's so much water, you want it to be pumped away.
Mm-hmm.
But what you could also do, Jeremy, is if you have a neat little irrigation box in the ground next to it, you could have a, you know, you could set up a little system where you have a T on it.
Yes.
With a ball valve, and that pipe runs to a tank, for example.
Uh-huh.
And you could always just open that box. You know, it's got to be managed then. That's the only catch. And then you shut the one that leads to the gutter in the road, and it just runs into the stormwater, and you use the one that that actually pumps the water into your tank. So you obviously must make sure that the pump – I don't think the pump would battle pumping water 2 meters up.
No.
You know, generally the tanks are only about 2 meters tall.
Yes.
Depending on what JoJo tank you use, obviously the 10,000 liters are quite big, but not many people, I notice – especially homes have 10,000 liters. Mm. It's just too big a tank, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that is just an option, Jeremy, that you can utilize that water.
Yes.
Obviously means that you'd have to have a tank and maybe another small little 0.5 booster pump on the tank, so that when you have that water, you can then obviously, as you just said, put that water back into your garden some way. But, you know, if you're getting somebody in who's logical and can chat to you, there's many ways you can go about it, you know. And that's always the problem I've had with the tanks. I mean, I've started, without offending Jeremy, and I don't want to be rude about the tanks now, but I like buffalo grass over all my years, learning that buffalo is really not the best lawn. It is lacquer when you own a home in Scarborough and you don't ever go there and it establishes itself. Really don't have to water it. But if you've got animals and you use it, it's you know, and that you learn. But after the 2018 and installing all the tanks, it just, you know, everyone wants a tank and then they say, okay, cool. And then you sort of say to them, but the problem with the tanks is it gets no water in summer when you need it.
Mm.
Fills up within one rain like we had in winter. And then you literally sit with a full tank until summer again. All the rest of that water has to overflow into a gutter or, as you say, maybe into your pool if you put the overflow in your pool. But then I saw 100 pools overflowing this season as well. So again, I had a client here in Stonehaven asked me, wanted a price for a tank. And I said, you know, but why? And he said, I don't know, just in case. I said, so can I be honest? You've got a swimming pool. Get a pump. You put the pump next to the swimming pool and you pump that water into your, if worst case happens again, you know. But obviously we are far away from that. So it's just a case of looking why you need it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that obviously I would look at, or somebody would come into Harry Goodman's and get some wonderful advice from all your amazing staff there. So we go back to the drainage.
Yeah.
The drainage is very easy. I mean, there are two ways. If you're dealing with clay, you could actually almost get away from not using, I mean, I'm talking proper clay though, not using any pipes, because if you actually dig a trench in clay and you backfill it with sand, it's naturally going to find that root and the water will naturally find that root, Jeremy.
Yeah.
But I use a company called Fibertex over the mountain, and I buy proper drainage piping. So you'll notice that a proper drainage pipe will come in 110 at its biggest and 80 at its smallest.
Okay.
And what I love about it, Jeremy, is it's if you look at the pipe carefully, half of the pipe, so the top 180 degrees of the pipe, faces up, is actually got slits and holes all the way along it. No matter how, if it's 6 meters all the way along.
Okay, so you buy it as a
As a proper drainage pipe. And then you have to buy what they call a geo sock.
Mm-hmm.
It comes with the pipe.
Wow.
And you basically slide that on like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, Jerry? And once you've laid that over the pipe, that's your very first layer of defense for any sand obviously getting into the pipe in that. And then, as you heard me say earlier, white sand, building sand, and obviously stone chip is a key to really making that water funnel to there.
Yes.
And you can't really go any further than half a meter. So it does turn into quite a job. And you obviously want to go quite deep because if you go too shallow, if somebody wants to plant there in the future, it's a nightmare. You know, they're hitting all your pipes. And then the key, Jeremy, is the spirit level becomes your best friend on a drainage job, because remember, we are using natural gravity to take the water to wherever we want it, be it a submersible pump system, be it a natural soakaway, be it, I did a client that had none one of those, the water, but because he was on the side of the mountain, we started at the back and we simply dug an angled trench to the front.
Yes.
We went under his wall and we actually broke away a curbstone and we put the pipe right to the edge of the
110.
Straight into the curb, cut it off flush with the paving, neat, cemented it back in. Yeah. And that literally just ran out naturally. So there was no pumps involved. So it's all about, you know, if you don't have to go for a pump. It depends on the angle of your property. Yeah. You know, some of these slopes, beautiful Constantia home, the catches you, people misunderstand. You start at this corner and you think you're going to go 45 degrees, but by the time you get 10 meters away, you're about 4 meters below ground level. And once you start trying to dig there. So it's just, you just need like a centimeter drop off, you know, water travels, water finds its route.
Yes.
And then what you would do, Jeremy, is you'd put that pipe in, you would encase it in white sand.
Okay.
Sometimes if generally the water's naturally around the sand's quite good, I don't go further than that, as long as the white sand's in. But if it's quite bad, Jeremy, then I'll put a geofabric over that white sand and I lay even more.
What do you mean?
A geofabric. So once
why would you put that on?
So the sand, remember the sand, water, sand particles are big.
Yeah.
So the water travels through sand quickly and easily. So if you've got clay to your right and to your left and you've got a pipe and sand, the water will naturally find that sand route and filter through the sand straight into your drainage pipe and take it away.
And then why would you use the geofabric over the sand?
If I'm putting in a layer of stone, because sometimes if you look at the, I like to do things properly, Jeremy. I don't ever want to go back to a job. And if you look at all the engineering jobs, so I'd rather be more of an engineer doing this than skimp on it and you end up with problems. When I first started, you live and learn. I did a job in Stonehaven as well many years back. It worked for the first year beautifully.
Uh-huh.
The second year, the client phoned me and we actually redug up the pit and the pit was blocked.
Okay.
And I learned my lessons from that. And you live and learn. Obviously, the client was very happy at the end of the day. We came to terms with each other. But my point being is that the reason why then I would put a fabric over a layer of sand and put my graystone is it's very much like we've always spoken about the pot situation. If you're putting drainage in a pot, Jeremy,
mm-hmm.
you don't put stones on top of sand because no matter what happens, the reverse way, sand on top of stones, Jeremy, my humble apologies. Because what happens when the water travels through the sand, then it hits the stone, it will pull the sand through the stone because the particles of the stone, the gaps in the stone are quite big because of the shape of the stone. And you actually end up doing the complete opposite to what you're trying to achieve, and you actually end up blocking your drainage or your whatever. So separating your sand and stone layer is key to any drainage in a pot, albeit in a massive drainage job that we're doing. And that's pretty much it to drainage.
Thick is that stone layer?
Well, you'd look at the area. Depends on how bad the water sits.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, I normally go about half a meter above, and you work it out in your cubic meters. You know, half a meter by 30 by 30.
Mm-hmm.
That gives you your dimensions, your cube, and then obviously your running meters, depending on how far you're taking it away.
Could be a very expensive exercise, hopefully you do it once.
No, it can. It must be done once. You've got to do it properly. That's the point.
Yeah.
And remember, as I said, Jeremy, sometimes you can get away with one pipe in the middle of a bad area. So sometimes lawns slope to an area, and then you'll find that the water only sits in the slope at the bottom, not at the top. So you don't need to put drainage in that area. So again, it's a case of going to site, talking to the client, where's the worst problems, and then figuring that out. But then, you know, you've got all these Y and T junctions that you can use so that you can run anything to everywhere. And the key is that eventually, somewhere along the line, you've got to sort of take all these pipes and taping them off to one pipe so that one pipe goes into your submersible water catch point and then takes the water away. You said something earlier about putting the water next to it so that there's a bit of water back. My concern about that, Jeremy, is water is very powerful. And I had a client where we had a tank that actually subsided itself. So what happened is water got in there, there was so much that it undermined the base under the tank.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tank, because it gets heavier than water, just literally shifted left and sat skew. So we had to dig it out and put something else under there. So maybe if you're doing that, it might not be a bad idea to put some bricks or like breeze blocks under your tank, even in the ground,
just
so that you know in your heart that it's stable, you know.
Yeah,
so all these things you've got to take into consideration, Jeremy.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so, and again, I think you're not wrong about the drainage. The drainage has been a massive thing. I mean, your mudslides everywhere. Cork Bay had mudslides coming on Boys Drive. I mean, it's insane. But that was also because of the fires.
Uh-huh.
We had all those fires in Cork Bay, and that
the vegetation mountains have been
ravaged, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I had a customer asking for a quote for 20 cubes of soil to fill in because all his, the roots of his trees were all exposed because of that water that scary. Just came, yeah. came down. And
remember, the price for him to replace all those trees would be way more than bringing in 20 tons of soil and backfilling. Good idea, unfortunately. But I think all those people have learned a lesson. It's time maybe to look at, you know, ground covers are a good thing to go with, Jimmy. I mean, you know this very mm-hmm. well. But using something hardy, indigenous, that covers the ground will take holds away, that holds the soil, that, you know, maybe putting in layering of your areas now, or maybe just doing exactly what we've spoken about. You know, drainage doesn't have to always be in a lawn or in a, you know, you could, if that person's seen that, he sits, well, maybe what I do now, maybe he puts a 110 drainage pipe at the top of his property on the boundary line, runs it across the entire boundary line, and then mm-hmm. comes down either side and just runs it out or something like that. And that is a first point of trying to take away a lot of water.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But definitely. Again, when it's as much as we've had, Jeremy, it was a lot of water. Sometimes it can just overrun and, you know, you can't fight nature, unfortunately. Sometimes we just got to live and learn. Yeah. Hey, Sue, are you okay there?
There was a...
I'm actually learning so much.
No, awesome.
There's a garden that I visited last year in at the Noordhoek Open Gardens.
Beautiful.
It was a new one in Noordhoek, obviously. And more like a permaculture sort of vibe because there were fruit trees in different areas. But the actual garden was on a slope, but the owner had cut in, or I don't know if that current owner had done it, but when the garden was set up, there was actually those things called swales. I don't know if you've ever had to do those.
Yet? No, not. Doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. So it's like a natural catchment with soil.
Okay.
And then the water will fill in there, and then the overflow will go into the next one, and then it's got like a sweeping
That's amazing.
Arc. So it's like arcing and then arcing and then arcing. And then in each one of those swales, you have vegetation because the water runs off the mountain or off the slope, and then it catches in that swale. And then those trees, like the fruit trees, were planted there, and then the overflow would go to the next one, and there would be more fruit trees in that one. So
that's incredible.
That's like a more natural way of doing it. I think you often see it on gravel roads as well, because they have that sort of thing that's been dug at a funny angle.
Yeah,
at like a semicircle curve, and that's also to do with the runoff off the road, and then it. That's takes amazing. It away.
I was actually looking at that a bit better.
Yeah.
But that, cool. I must say, Jeremy, that goes back to what, you know, my, I think it's my saying, but preparation is key.
Yeah.
No matter, you know, no matter what you're doing in life, you've prepped properly and make sure you've planned, you can accommodate and cope with anything. And it just sounds like that person had an amazing idea of what they wanted.
Exactly.
And did it properly. I mean, I also, in Glencairn Heights, where you live, Sue, mm-hmm. We did a client there and they had a lot of water coming through, but instead of swales and planting, they actually made it a natural lake. So the river kind of went through their home and they teared it. Yeah, it went around and back and they teared it through to everything. And, you know, clients in Cape Town just built one as well, like the natural bars, Jeremy, like a swimming pool.
Uh-huh.
That's natural. And then obviously at the bottom they had like a little natural pool. And then the plants all filter. It's, mm-hmm. What's the word for it? Anyway, it's a word for it. But so basically the water filters and the plants roots clean up the water and then it goes into the pool. And then a pump obviously pumps it back up to the top because you do need it to turn over. So that in summer, if there is no rain, it carries on. But what it does is it takes the water in winter mm-hmm. and just puts it into that same environment, which is pretty cool, I think. So planning is key, as they say.
Yeah,
anything.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, a friend in Komaki has done the same thing. They've got runoff on the mountain into that natural pool.
Yeah.
And then the overflow just goes
through to the garden. It's incredible. And we don't realize how much water runs, even through summer. You'll be surprised if you're in the right area. So we all have clients, remember the client in their verge dug a massive hole, put in a sump pump, pumps it up to his tanks, and he's got like 3,000-5,000 liters of water that are tanks that are full every year throughout the whole year from
because of a natural spring or natural runoff.
100% natural spring.
Yeah.
And I think that's incredible. I was just reading about a shopping center over the weekend. I don't know which one it was. I didn't quite get, but it's gone completely 100% off South African grid, utilizing runoff water from a mountain and obviously solar panels, et cetera, et cetera. But it's just incredible what you can do, you know.
No, definitely.
Yeah. And your next one, I mean, Jimmy, you talk about landscape paving and that. I mean, are you, I heard a rumor that you've stopped making paving.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, I've stopped making the paving. We still obviously have the paving, and then if
people need it, you just source it. And
I would,
in.
I would source it. Yeah,
no, just
everything. The cost of everything has gone.
No, it's ridiculous.
Gone crazy.
It's ridiculous. But I only mentioned Jeremy because you know we're talking about art landscaping, and I mentioned earlier in one of the shows when it comes to fighting environments.
Mm-hmm.
So like shade is a problem in South Africa. You know, people don't understand the complications of shade, and the reason why the shade is there probably because of a tree, and then suddenly you're dealing with the tree root. So I always tell clients, don't fight an area. If the grass isn't grown in 2 years, the grass isn't going to grow this year. So, you know, either you do a nice paving under there, leave a gap and put some Mondo grass or something that likes a bit of shade, obviously, Wonder Lawn, Foxglove, whatever you need. But so that's I enjoy paving for that and softening it with planting between. I'm not quite a fan of grouting and stone chipping between. And then retaining walls. I mean, I love retaining walls, as you mentioned, because of the way that you can plant them out. You know, you can make a retaining wall look lacquer. But in saying that, Jeremy, it takes a lot of effort to get those right because I've done a few, and what happens is over about a year, you find that the soil subsides behind them.
Yes.
Because you haven't compacted enough or you haven't put a layer. So it's very important that when you build your first row, you backfill and use a compactor and fill in and backfill and keep going. And then I do come with a bag of dagger or cement, as we call it. Dagger, that's what the guys call it. And come in, and just the tiny little holes that you get between, it's good to fill those up and keep your soil in your wall. So that's just a bit of advice with your retainer walls, I think.
Yeah, you could personally probably also put a layer of like the geotextile behind it.
Yeah.
And that also keep the soil.
100%.
Otherwise, yeah, it does come between the gaps. And then you're going to have problems with, you know, like pockets of air hole or whatever. And then you could have, you know, the subsiding and stuff like that, which obviously you don't want. So, yeah, prep is key. It's with
key to everything, isn't
with
it?
With retaining walls. But, yeah, a lot of houses on the mountains definitely need it. Or, yeah.
Something that I've been wanting to use, which I haven't got there, which is frustrating because I love products, is gabions.
I was going
to
say,
I haven't found a job that I can use a gabion on because remember, gabions are serious. You know, once one gabion's in, you ain't moving that thing unless you unpack it. I mean, it's a ton of rocks in one.
Yeah, just explain a gabion.
So a gabion is I think they've used them a lot in Chappies further down on Halpe side, but basically a gabion is you get a steel cage that is, I think it's about a meter by 1.5 meters by a meter. So it's quite a big area. It's a diamond mesh cage. Sometimes the mesh is smaller, though, depending on the size of your rocks. I mean, I don't want to quite say chicken mesh. I think that's a bit small and a bit soft for that job. But it's that type of steel. And it actually comes with a lid that you open. And then once you've positioned it where you want it, you have to have a mason on you. Because the best ones are the ones where you've packed rock in, but the front of it has been, the rocks have been cut and shaped so that they're flat.
Yeah.
And then they naturally pack the flat. So it looks like a rock wall in a cage, basically.
Yes.
And then once you fill that up, I mean, that thing is a ton of rocks. And you can place one next to it. And obviously, because they are mesh fences and they're made beautifully, you put one right next to it, you use some binding wire and bind them together.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do your however many you need at the bottom. And then you'd obviously have to backfill a little bit behind because you don't go straight up. Whenever you use like gabions or retainers, you never actually go in a straight line, Jeremy.
Yeah, it's got
to that's a rock. That might as well just build a wall. Then, yeah, you've got to always angle back slightly for the effectiveness of the retaining.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just keep doing the same process, Jeremy. But I've never used one.
Okay.
But once you've got one in, I reckon, you know, if they're covered too, nothing will move those things. Nothing.
Well, don't say nothing. No.
I mean, Chappies has been closed for, I don't know when they're going to open, so it's killing us a little bit for the travel, but I suppose we want safety first, hey, Sue?
Definitely.
All right. Any questions come through?
No questions yet. But keep rolling. Keep on a roll, yeah. Keep going.
I think we're just having a chat. It's fantastic. I mean.
The things that I haven't chatted about are like trellises, arbors, gazebos.
Yeah.
I mean, you've done.
Yeah. That kind of tied in with the creeper chat we have. It's the same projects. I mean, some people use trellises for creepers. Some people just use trellises for parting an area from a garden, you know, Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a trellis is not a soil retaining product, so I wouldn't really use it in retaining systems or holding anything in place. It's too weak for that. But it can definitely, you might build a retainer wall and might be able to put a trellis on the top of the wall or
actually like a screen
off of the wall and let the creepers grow up, you know.
Yeah.
So I love woodwork. I just I don't think the woods as well treated as they used to treat it in the olden days. So I always just know that in a few years, if you put posts in the ground, you might have to look at reposting your posts. it's not as bad as it sounds. You don't have to remove everything, but you might have to dig down next to it, put a new post in the concrete next to it, and then obviously bolt the two together.
Wow.
So that it stays strong, because it does, everything rots eventually, Jeremy. You know, we have this harsh UV sun in summer and obviously this wetness in winter now.
Yeah.
So that's woodwork. I mean, I'm a fan of wood. It works very beautifully. I did a massive split pole retaining system up in Stonehaven here, and it's been 7 years and it still looks good. So
nice.
Happy about that. And that was a retaining system. But remember, just to put it out there, I think I read an article. If you're going 1.8 meters and above that height in terms of your retainer, unfortunately, you might have to look at getting an engineer in.
Yes.
Purely just to give you the feedback that, yes, you can use a retaining wall for this 2 meter thingy. They might say to you, no, your house is too big for that. So unfortunately, I'm very good that way. I think I go up to about 1.5, 1.7.
Yeah.
And if anything above that, I always let the client know, look, this is a garden wall we're building.
Yeah.
But once it goes above that height, it becomes an engineering wall. So
yes.
As long as the engineer is happy with what we're doing, you just got to get that sort of tick off and sign off, you know.
Definitely.
Just so that there's, I mean, I believe in my job and in myself. And I say that because even when I build a 1.5 meter retaining wall, I always, every third block you have them in a metal rod.
Yeah, rebar.
Yeah, rebar. And at the bottom of that block, you've put concrete as well. So there's these little tricks that you do through the wall.
Definitely.
To give it full strength, you know.
Yeah.
But a retaining wall is just that. It's like a puzzle that goes together beautifully and holds itself together anyway. So, I mean, I love, and there's another product I love using at the moment, but it's got nothing to do, but it's like parking bays. So they're about 600 by...
grass blocks.
Yeah, the grass blocks.
Okay.
With the diamonds, and they are just one of the best products on the market. If you've got an area where you're battling to hold anything, or you know, it's in the ground, these things, you come along, and again, what I love about them is you can actually plant grass in them. So I've done that for clients, and then the clients park in them, and look, obviously where the tires drive over there, the grass, but it's a green parking bay, and it just,
they've got them at the back of the Checkers.
Yes, that's the ones. That's the ones all the way along the back of the Checkers.
Yes.
So look how natural it looks. I mean, yes, it's got a bit of weed in there, but it really is a product to use.
Yeah, it's better than a solid piece of concrete.
100%. And the reason why I'm mentioning it is just quickly before we finish, because I know we're going to finish now, and I think, Jeremy, what we'll do is in 2 weeks' time, we'll carry on because it's actually a good conversation. But what I was going to say is they don't have to be used as parking bays either.
Mm-hmm.
I had a client that had a 1 meter issue. So we actually put them standing up and then leaned them back slightly, and we actually worked them in two together flat, and we made like a flat long wall along this area where water would seep out in that.
Just okay.
So it holds and binds them.
Wow.
Planted into them.
Yeah, because they're heavy as well.
Very heavy, very heavy. And they just work, Jeremy.
Nice.
I mean, there's plenty of, but I'm going to go read about your, what are those things called again?
Swales.
Swales.
Yes, well, you see, I tell you, I learn all the time.
Even me.
But getting back to tree roots and that's also a menace for fibrecrete walls and paving.
Yeah, 100%.
Because that can cause so much
No, 100%.
Damage.
But again, if somebody's moved into a home, they wouldn't know. But if you live in a home and you're going to plant a tree, obviously you don't plant a ficus on your home.
Yeah. But sometimes you
go to Harry Gimmons and you get the right advice for the right tree for the area. Mm-hmm. You know, deciduous, evergreen, what are you looking for? Do you want shade in winter? Do you not want, you know, there's a lot that goes
with
everything.
Especially when you purchase, and now you purchase an existing home with that. Then you have a problem, because then you've got to call David.
It's going to remove this tree.
100%. I've got no work at the moment. So buy a home with a bad tree and I'll be there.
So time has run out for us. Well done.
Thank you so much
for coming in and sharing your knowledge. Yes, very interesting. As I say, I keep learning every time you're on this radio. I learn.
No, 100%.
I forget, then I learn.
Because he had a holiday, so he's coming in 2 weeks' time. He's not off the hook on this one. He's going to come and go for this next one.
I'll be back in 2 weeks. Right.
Lekker.
Have a lekker day. Thank you.
Bye.
This gardening feature was brought to you by Harry Humans Garden Center.
Hi. I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Humans Garden Center, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden center, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Humans Garden Center.